Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. You know, new windows, new set of doors can do a lot of things for you. Can change the look and the feeling and the vibe of your home. Plus, it can add value to your home and it can make your home more energy efficient. Pella checks all those boxes and then some. So now is the time, man. Turn your window and door remodeling dreams into a reality with Pella. Check them out online. PellaOmaha.com. That is PellaOmaha.com. All right. It is a very special podcast on deck for you right now. It is the one-year anniversary of the launch of the pod, August 26, 2019. I launched the Nick Bob Podcast, and here I am a year later, and what a year it has been on a variety of levels. It's been an absolute blast to launch this podcast, one of the most fulfilling years of my life from a professional standpoint. And, you know, I try to say it a lot, but I can't say it enough. From the bottom of my heart to all of you, thank you. Thank you to everyone out there that has supported the podcast, listened to the podcast, subscribed to the podcast, shared the podcast, told a friend about the podcast, all that. Thank you. It's pretty cool to take a leap of faith and try something new and try something different and have support along the way. And, you know, I told you guys a year ago, I wanted you guys on this journey with me, and you've been there every single step of the way. It's been an amazing year with the pod, and it's all thanks to you listeners. It's really all about you. So again, thank you. So how do you celebrate the one-year anniversary of the pod? You holler at Bo Rude, duh. You fire up a mailbag, duh. And you crack open a bottle of wine, duh. So that's what's on deck here. That's what we're going to do. So let's get to it, man. It is yours truly. It is Bo Rude drinking a bottle of wine, answering mailbag questions. This was a blast. Enjoy. All right. We are here. It is a one-year anniversary wine pod with yours truly, Nicholas Allen, and the man 4 feet, 6 feet, we're social distancing still, Bo Robert Rude. There's a lot of things I want to cheers to. We're gonna look back on the year of pods, but can I first cheers to your wife? Because
what do you mean by that?
What do you mean you're cheersing to my wife?
You keep my wife out of your mouth.
What have you been doing with my wife? No, your wife this afternoon went plant shopping with my wife.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I just want to cheers to your wife for getting me out of doing plant shopping.
Well, I'll tell her she was a big help today. Yeah, well, they bought a tree.
So. They got a tree. Maybe it was tree.
They
bought a tiny tree.
Yeah.
I don't ask questions, but for me, if someone said, hey, you can do the Ironman triathlon or go plant and tree shopping, I'm like, fucking, let's just do that. Let's just
so do 50 miles on the bike, and then
how many miles am I swimming?
Two in the water, and then
that's
okay.
Fine. Those kinds of moments, like when you have to go get mulch or whatever, like those are the moments where I want to get my Michael Keaton Multiplicity game right. That's where you wish you could go.
Living with yourself.
You need to go to the spa, get a clone, and have your clone do all that stuff. Am I the only one that cannot?
I don't know.
Do you like doing that stuff?
No, I know, but my wife loves it. A domesticated situation is her situation. It was like she was raised for it. Like, oh yeah, it's time to make a fence for our garden. Like, I've been
today,
ready for this.
We're
yeah.
mulching the yard. It's like,
they love it. They love
what
doing
is that? Because my wife's the exact same way. The most accurate scene in cinematic history is Frank the Tank, old school, telling those college kids about his Saturday, about his, like, we're gonna go to the Home Depot, and then we might go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know. We might not have enough time. That's because that's what you like devolve into, like, what are we doing this Saturday? We're getting mulch, and then we're going to do things around the house.
When does that happen? Like, what?
I don't know.
It's happened to me, and I don't know when it happened, but it slowly just happened. As soon as you get married, I don't
you're
know.
Mulch.
Is it the next week after you've been married, or is there at least a couple months buffer before they? You just go get mulch then.
I don't know. All of a sudden, you're like, what are you doing this weekend? It used to be like beers at Ted's, more beers at Frank's, and then beers after hours at Sammy's. Now it's that. It's like Saturday is going to be, I got to stay, and we're planting a garden, and we're laying mulch around, and then we're going to...
You know, I don't know about you. I felt like for 10 years, like my Sunday morning through Sunday, you know, midday was just like hangover recovery, right? So, Sundays are just there's more time.
Oh god,
the extra time, right?
That's right. Oh, I know you're not used to being like active on a Saturday or Sunday morning.
Yeah, I'm not hungover anymore.
Oh no, you can't be. I mean, come on, man. Because you know what's a good. I've started to watch the show Bar Rescue. Have you ever watched the show Bar Rescue?
Is that the big muscle guy?
He's not a muscle guy, but he's kind of like, he looks like he could be in the mafia. And he comes in and he saves your bar.
Okay, now I know who you're talking about. There's two guys. There's a that guy, and then there. He must be a restaurant guy that must just do curls. And he's British. He's like the angry British guy, but then he wants to like hug.
I know what you, the Prophet, maybe? No, that's not right. I know what you're talking about, though.
You know I'm talking about.
But this guy is more of like, he's a heavier set guy, and he comes in, and these bars that these guys are running are some of the most atrocious bars. It's like, there's roaches everywhere, there's rats at the bar stools, and this guy comes in and rips them.
That's got to be a prerequisite to get your bar
right.
on
if
this show.
If you submit, I'd like to be on Bar Rescue, like you have to basically not be cleared by the health department.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, have you been cleared by the health department? If so, you are not Bar Rescue material.
You run a clean bar and nobody's stealing from you. This isn't looking good for Bar Rescue.
I'm just telling you, watching Bar Rescue is just, you think some places are disasters, and then you see some of these spots on Bar Rescue prior to getting rescued. It's just amazing. Yada, yada, yada. Cheers to your wife, okay?
Cheers to my wife.
But here's the thing. Cheers to 1 year ago today, August 26th, 2019, the Nick Bob Podcast was launched. And do you remember our very first podcast we recorded and what we did afterwards?
Oh, vividly.
Yes.
Because it was one of the first times I ever wrote down in a journal anything. I was like, I'm going to start journaling.
Look at you.
Right?
You're so domesticated. You have a journal. Did you have a journal prior to getting married?
No. Heavens. What am I, journaling on a Friday night? What?
This weekend, I got beers again. And
beers with Frank and beers with Joe. This is a pretty boring journal.
Looking, going through this guy's journal. This guy got beers with Frank and beers with Ted and beers with Sammy.
Pretty boring. So, anyway.
So you journaled about our first podcast.
Because it was a defining moment in my life.
Wasn't it a special day?
It was so special. I remember We went, you're in the studio.
Yeah, we went to the Parkville Media Studios in Omaha.
In Omaha, we laughed through the whole show.
And then there was that good nervous energy because, you know, we've done radio together and all that stuff, but it just felt different.
But you were launching the pod. The Nick Bob Podcast was being launched. So it felt special. Husker football season was a week away.
Yeah.
And then we went out.
We went to Sullivan's Steakhouse.
Yep, and I think we had bone-in ribeyes.
We did.
And we had wine.
And the wine was great. It just was, it was a celebration.
Yeah.
The wine was great. The steak was great. The conversation was great. And then you and I, we parked a ways away from Sullivan's and we walked for a little bit in downtown Omaha as the sun was setting. And you could just feel it. Like, it doesn't surprise me that it made the journal for you.
It made the journal. And I think the fact that we're sitting here doing a wine pod, I know that night reinforced, we got to do wine pods because we were eating steak, great steak, by the way, and
delicious steak,
drinking great wine, and the conversation usually gets to a new level when you start drinking the wine. So the wine part, the pod, I think, was actually born that night.
There's no question. And I just think we're going to get into some mailbag questions as we are. We did cheat a little bit. We've already had about a glass of wine before we got started. We like to get, you know, when LeBron goes and plays, he doesn't stretch in the first quarter. He stretches before he's warm. He warms
he's
up.
You've seen his ball work he does?
Yes. How about that? Do you like that? That's all core. You're a core guy through and through.
I need to get my core.
His core's off the chain.
That guy only does core.
That guy's got a core to die for. But we got to get our core on. So we've had a glass of wine. But it just shows that, like, from... there's sometimes the universe, when you do something, the universe sends you signals like, do more of that.
Yeah.
That was good. That made you feel right. There was something like, all I know is when we recorded the first pod, it felt like celebratory. So yeah. There's something to that. Here we are a year later. We're drinking more wine. We're recording a pod. And I put out on Twitter and Facebook, Throw us some mailbag questions. So we got about like 20 questions. I don't know if we're going to get through all these. We'll find out. There's a final question from my cousin Scott that I just don't even want to answer.
Scott
Baugh.
Scott's pretty great.
Scott, yeah, it's not good. When we get to it, you're going to say, I think you're going to plead the fifth. That's what I think you're going to do. So, Pauly Sports on Twitter. We're going to start with this, because we're already talking about it. It says, what are your favorite discussions/interviews you had in the first year of the podcast? And he threw out the Last Dance pods. He brought up Bruce Rasmussen's selection algorithm. I talked to him. He had this like elaborate thing. Our Husker recap pods, Bill Self, Jay Billis. He liked the fireworks conversation we had for the 4th of July as well.
A couple people like the fireworks.
Yeah, how about that? Look at that. We're surprising. Big in the fireworks community. To me, there are three things that are defined this year for us doing this pod. The game recaps, which, wink, wink, nod, nod, we got a little something cooking up for you. So just keep waiting for that. But that is one of the things that is like, as sad as I was when Kevin Warren canceled football season, it was like, no recap pods. Crap. But those were fun.
Yeah. We were actually just talking about this off air, but we felt like the response was kind of blew our mind last year. Every single weekend, you know, we'd go to these Husker games or we'd be out in the town and somebody would say, I love those recap. It was pretty like I was kind of taken back by it. I wasn't expecting that kind of response.
Right. 'Cause sometimes you don't know. That's the beauty. Like you create a podcast, you create content, you throw it out there and you don't know if it's going to resonate with people.
No, but I mean, thousands of people immediately were on those shows,
which was great.
And that's amazing.
It felt therapeutic. It felt fun. What was fun about it was for a long time, you and I talked every Sunday recapping the Nebraska football game prior to even having a podcast. So it was like, we got to continue to do that, but in a more like buttoned up fashion.
Yeah.
You know,
putting a mic in there. I mean, ever we did that, it was like, if we
hey, what'd you think? Or, oh, hey, we, or I know I was with you last night at Bill and Ted's drinking beer, huge
but Bill
beer.
Bill wouldn't shut up, so we couldn't talk.
But so that was fun. The recap pods were fun. The wine pods have been a blast. I mean, we always kind of thought, you know, what if we just drank wine as... because everybody has that with their friends. This is an original thought. You know, when you have a couple drinks with your friends, you're like, man, this conversation... This could be a podcast, or this is what a cool video.
We all think that.
We all think that, you know, and so we tried to bring that to light, and that's been fun. The Last Dance podcast, the Jordan documentary, those are going to hold a special place in my heart because not only it captured a lot of things, it captured, like, when I think of The Last Dance, I'm going to think of like when we were in the heart of really quarantining in this pandemic, and then it captures your heart of nostalgia of Jordan. Then it all culminating with you and I just pointing out to my backyard, smoking stogies and drinking whiskey to honor Jordan. Those are
yeah, that is going to be memorable. The Last Dance, the fact that, you know, in that moment, they were willing to rush that to get it out. And I feel like we needed that. Oh. And that we needed that week or two of just, you know,
really needed it.
Yeah. And we got to watch all those episodes and just knock them out. I mean, that was great.
So, and then for me, so, like me personally, I always the Bill Self podcast was fun to do. It was fun to get a guy that you know, and really kind of bear it all. Even in like anytime I got to really be vulnerable, and so there were a couple. There was the Bill Self podcast. There was me explaining my journey to Kansas. Then there was, I felt like, I don't know why, I could have done this on the radio, but I'd had a podcast where I fully explained my recruitment or lack thereof with Nebraska basketball. Yeah. It felt like a therapeutic for me to kind of like set the record straight and put it out there. And then the other one, and we'll move on to the next question, was our Kobe Bryant tribute podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Where the day Kobe Bryant tragically passed away, we immediately did a pod and I cried.
You did.
I cried. I cried on that podcast, but that felt like there's been a lot of memorable ones, but that one's up there.
That was one that, yeah, it was almost transcended like the entertainment of it. You want to talk about therapy? That was a therapy day.
That was. I mean, all I know is my little nephew Bodie, 13 years old. He's listened to the Kobe Bryant podcast of ours like 5 or 6 times. He just loves it. I don't know what it is. I had someone else tell me that they've listened to it a couple of times too. So it just was everybody. I thought we tried to capture our emotions, which oftentimes are what everybody else is feeling too.
Well, I think something that happens, and I, you know, on this pod with me and you in general, this is like you're just being yourself. Like you are true. Like some people do a podcast and they have an agenda and they have
right.
There's the wall and the professional. Like you let it out. Like letting it out and being yourself is not an easy thing to do. And I think those are the things that one resonate with others. And when you get to do them, you probably feel really good. You go, God, it felt good.
It felt good. I needed, like, even if we weren't recording and put out a pod that night for the Kobe Bryant thing, like I needed you to come over and just talk about Kobe.
I wanted to.
Seriously. Like, I needed that.
It was a life moment. He put us all back into perspective mode where we went, whoa, what's going on here? Like this is not as long of a ride as we think it's going
to
be.
I think you know something was really near and dear to you as we're only on question number one and we're still
going on this. What number are we on? Number one.
You know something's pretty near and dear to you when it's never too far from the surface of bubbling over into emotion, if that makes sense. Like there's some people that can die or things that can happen that like when you bring them up, it's a ways from the surface. Yeah. You know what I mean? Even now, because we just had Kobe Bryant's birthday and Kobe Bryant Day, like to this day, I still have like it's never too far from the surface of me getting emotional thinking about that dude. You know,
it's funny you said that. This is all weird. We had our breakfast club. That's the
workout.
Some of our buddies. Yeah, we were working out. We did
a Kobe Bryant workout.
Yeah, we chose the number. I said, for some reason, I'm thinking about the number 8 today, and then the guy said Kobe Bryant for the Kobe Bryant. I was like, well, maybe. And so we did 8 rounds of 8 because we were thinking Kobe. So did 8 rounds of 8 for a workout. But it's weird to say that. Little things like that.
Those are little things like that. By the way, there was in the Players Tribune, I think it was Allen Iverson wrote a letter to Kobe that was pretty cool on his birthday. You should read that as well. Okay, one question down. At this rate, we're going to be here till midnight.
Let's try to get 2 in this pod.
I'm interested to get your thought on this here. Logan via email says, you had some great people come on the podcast so far. If you could choose any 3 people out there to invite on the pod, who would you choose? So I kind of broke this up into like realistic gets for the pod and unrealistic ones. You know?
You're saying gets as in like anybody in the world to get on?
So let's start with the realistic ones. Like I really want Frost. I would love to get Scott Frost. And I feel like there's one, like that's not far-fetched.
Frost and T.O. are the two that I think would be the funnest for like what we've been doing most of, which is a lot of Nebraska football.
Well, and then I'll take it to stay along those themes. I wrote down Bo Pelini. I think Bo Pelini would be an incredible, like if he really let his hair down, which I think he would be so good to talk to.
I think I could get his hair down.
I think you could get, yeah. I think you, I mean, you played for the guy, right?
Oh yeah.
But Bo would be on there. And then I put Hoiberg. I'm going to get Coach Hoiberg on the pod at some point.
Yep.
Kyle Korver. I was going to get Kyle and then I'm going to get Kyle at some point. I want to get Kyle on the pod. And we should just hit up like Keith Mann for this. We got to get Adrian Martinez on the pod.
Yeah, I guess they're not under contract with any podcasts, right? I think they can do whatever they want.
I think they can do whatever they want. Yeah. I mean, I think
players can probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, he went on some other podcast. I don't know. I can't remember what it was called, but like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we could get him.
Yeah.
I think we could get him. In terms of like anyone, I always think coaches, I know because a lot of them are coaches are interesting people. So like I wrote down Coach K, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, like the guys that have done it and done it at the highest level. If you could really get them to like to pick their brain and like lay it all out there, those would be high on the list.
I would enjoy Saban and Belichick for the sole reason is I would not interview them as somebody else would interview them. I would interview them.
You just want to talk?
I'd want to talk to them, but I would heavily lean on very specific philosophies that I think would get them there. I'd be like, I'm curious, what do you think about this very specific aspect of football or coaching or leadership and organization? Those are the things those guys love, and that's what they know. And I think those guys would, if they were excited about a question, they would give you stuff that you'd be like, wow.
But because they probably wouldn't get that. You could give them like a, you know, when it's fourth down and you're at the 35, it's fourth and seven at the 35, you know, when you're in that no man's land of like, should we go for it? If we're kicking, we're only getting like, what's your philosophy on that? You know, like things like super specific game situational things, I think would get them going.
Yeah, you got to get those guys into their world. You know, if you want to get to drama and you want to get to juicy gossip, like they're going to shut you down.
Right.
And that would not be fun. Then they're the least fun guys to interview. Where like I think there's a space where they're the greatest interview, but you got to be a great interviewer.
Well, I think I'm not sure if you saw the HBO special between those two.
Oh, I
like those two talking.
I got it taped.
I mean, it's amazing.
And then they turn the cameras off, and they start asking about some very specific your safeties, but you know they're like. And they've been talking about for years, all these little weird, how do you handle? I mean, I remember Belichick telling us, he came in the linebacker room, and I'm not joking you, there's a play called a wham, right? It's where like a fullback or a tight end motions and the center releases and that guy, the motioner blocks the nose tackle.
Yep.
And how the linebackers are supposed to react to that, like little things like that. He says, well, me and Pepper have been debating this for 10 years and they've been talking about it for 10 years, right, how to handle it. Right. That's the stuff they think about.
Right.
Nick, the wham block, are your eyes supposed to be on the guards or the fullback first? It's a 10 year debate that they're not sure of, that they have philosophies. And they had like, that's what those guys talk about.
And in some ways they get more excited about that. They'd be like, of all your national championship teams, which one is the best and why?
They don't care.
They're like, I don't know.
They don't care. They want to be asked. So when your middle linebackers are reading, why should their eyes be on the guards versus the fullbacks? And they'll be like, oh man, that's a great question.
Right,
and 10
right.
minutes later, they'll be like, and we haven't solved it.
I love it. I love that you got this. We need to get these guys in the pod so you can ask. You could ask Pelini these questions. Does Pelini get fired up about philosophy?
Oh, he's like,
he's a lot. I think you want to render Bo to be like, what you do is you just stick your face in his face, and then it like
Barrett said he, when he gets on the chalkboard, it's like the beautiful mind, like Russell Crowe. It's like
safeties,
motion. It's like genius stuff.
See, that's right. I'm telling you, Bo's high on my list of getting up.
People don't get that about Pelini. It's closer to genius stuff when it comes to a defensive coordinator than anything else. Awesome.
The two other names I wrote down, Big Shock. I wrote down Jay-Z because, and you could pick Bruce Springsteen. I think musicians would be interesting to talk to, like how you create music, how you write, all that stuff. And then Bron Bron. I still think like a tell-all, go through your career, if you ask the right questions, would be really interesting. And if Bron was in the mood to really let it out, Bron is high on my
list. What about MJ? You didn't say MJ.
I feel like the last dance I got, like, maybe it's just because I feel like I already got a lot from him.
But see, he withheld so much for so long. I think the hard part with MJ is this, is the guy's your hero. Do you want to really meet your hero, or do you just want him to be your hero?
Yeah. Probably just want him to be my hero. There's a chance I have a horrible interaction with Jordan, and I'm like, crap. You know? I don't know. You get him a foot-long cigar, he'll be there.
How about we play to Jordan's weaknesses?
Especially if he's going to smoke that thing until it's gone, so he's going to be here for a while. He had one of the final scenes of The Last Dance, he had an obnoxiously long cigar. It was like,
that's a good
what
thought.
Is that? It's ridiculous.
A little whiskey.
A little cigar.
Cigar.
He'll talk for a while. Anybody else are missing there? Are we ready for question number three?
Let's keep this.
Keep it rolling?
Yeah, let's keep this baby rolling.
Fletcher says, best movies/shows during quarantine. Mine is Ozark. I binged Ozark during quarantine. It's not Tiger King. How bad did people misread Tiger King? We even talked about it, but everybody, Tiger King couldn't have been more of like it was a phenomenon in the moment of everyone's quarantined. Oh my God, there's this new thing. Everybody thought it was like Tiger King's going to take over the world.
What was a one hit wonder that was good for just like that? Less than a week or two. It was like a week or two. I mean, not the Macarena. Because that might have lasted longer. I'm talking about one of those one-hit wonders that, like, it got a week, and then it
felt more
over.
Like Jersey Shore than it did The Real World. The Real World had, like, lasting
power, yeah,
and influence. The Jersey Shore was just like, cabs are here, Jim Tan Laundry, and that was it. And you knew it was terrible, but you watched it, and it was terrible.
Oh, God, geez.
The situation.
The
Ronnie,
situation.
Pauly D.,
say what?
Vinny.
Jersey Shore. They had more Jersey Shore's got more lasting power than Tiger King.
I'm not sure there's a show that when I watched it, every time it ended, I was just like, what am I doing? But they'd be like, next week on Jersey Shore, it'd be like, Vinny'd be like, we're getting cabs. I'd be like, oh, man.
you kind of like Vinny, didn't you?
I like Vinny and Paul. Vinny and
Pauly. You like Pauly
D and Vinny were just happy.
Yeah.
Ronnie would like fight people, and the situation was just too big of a magoosh to even deal with.
Wow.
But no, so Tiger King was not that good. But Ozark's fantastic. Living With Yourself, Paul Rudd, to tie it to the top, was really good.
Yep.
I finally watched Almost Famous.
Yeah, that was you told me that was one I was so happy you finally got around.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's just so good. You know something's good. Like, every scene I was like, during it, I'm like, God, this is good. I don't know how I didn't watch it, but I didn't watch it.
I told you about it for years, and you just didn't
want
to go there.
I don't know
what
my problem was. I was like, I don't know what I was doing. Well, what do you got?
Me and my wife, we rewatched Mad Men. It was her first time through, and Mad Men, she'll probably put as her favorite favorite show.
She liked it like that?
She was so sad when it ended.
Really?
Yeah, we rented from the public library so that we could. I got my DVDs from the public library.
I love you.
I know.
So much.
And so I go to the library, get free DVDs. Sorry, people.
I didn't know the library had DVDs.
Free DVDs. So I got the Mad Men. We watched Mad Men through on
Mad Men at the Lincoln Public Library.
They got some things at the library.
I bet they do. Dog.
It's like me and like seven people in there. We're like, we got to figure it out in here. One of those guys might be like a crazy, like,
oh, God.
Walking around in a trench coat, like,
oh, looking to expose himself to people. Yeah. It's not good, but yeah.
Look in here.
I got your Mad Men right here. Welcome to the
Mad Men.
So that's your answer, Mad Men, rewatching it? Nothing wrong with that.
Mad Men, and right now we're just finishing up Yellowstone.
I've heard good things. Is it good? Costner. It's Costner.
Costner's tougher than tough, you know. It's cowboy stuff. It's one of my favorite shows right now.
Okay, I need
Yellowstone.
How many seasons do they have?
This is three.
Okay, I'm gonna get it.
Yellowstone's real good.
But Ozark was great though.
Ozark, fantastic. Ozark's the best.
You made a comment that might be kind of blasphemy though.
What'd I say?
That Ozark's better than Breaking Bad?
For me, I think so.
Wow.
I think it might be recent.
You might be Charles Barkley, like, this is the greatest game I've
ever
seen.
It might be recency bias, but if you were to say, I mean, Breaking Bad was Breaking great, Bad. But Ozark.
Jesse Pinkman.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Come on, man.
I don't know. It's
Ozark's good.
I put Mad Men over both of those. I put, Boardwalk probably over both of those.
You're a Nicky Thompson guy. Shouts out to Chucky White.
True Detective season one over both of those. Sopranos, I missed the Sopranos window. I missed it. But The Wire, that's Nick Baugh's other one.
I know.
Wire fluctuates between the, like, maybe not as good as Mad Men and Boardwalk, but maybe better than Breaking Bad.
We'll move on to this next question, but before I do that, you want to hear my Marty impression?
Marty Bird?
Marty Bird. Right, yeah. Here we go. Ruth, not now. I feel like the whole... How many times did he say, Ruth, not now?
Ruth, and then, not now.
And then we would walk away. Marty, I don't know shit about fuck. Ruth, not now. And then walk
Ruth,
away.
Maybe you shouldn't use meth on your little brother. I don't know. I'm just thinking about that, Ruth.
Just thinking about that. I don't know. Not now. Gotta go. Okay. I mean, how many times?
I'm laundering money here all day long. Maybe you should just cut me a little slack for a little buddy before dinner. I'm just laundering money all day long. Thank you, honey.
I got Navarro on my ass.
I got the Mexican cartel coming at me, honey. Can I come down? Eat a little dinner before you lay it on me, okay?
Okay. Okay. Marty Bird. Marty Bird impressions. More doable than you think. That's the big takeaway. My boy Matt DeMarinis on Twitter. He says, what do you miss most about everything prior to New York City, which is where we were when the pandemic hit? But it was, so basically prior to, what do you miss most about life prior to the pandemic? I've had the fortune of being able to think about this question all day. You just got it. Do you have something that immediately, because there's, you can go super deep or you can be like, I miss burritos on Wednesdays with Ted. You know, you can do something super simple.
This might sound weird. I've had this image in my head. It's a couple, there's like two or three images in my head that I keep going to. It's.
All right. I'm thinking about your Marty Bird impression. I'm good.
It's something along the lines of like being at a bar at a Husker tailgate or somewhere crowded and you're just like you're walking through, squeezing through the line, you know, you're in the rail yard and you're squeezing through people.
When's
and like,
the last time you've been in a crowd like
things
that?
Are happening. It's just a wild, like one of those scenes where I'm just going like, oh, well, it feels like it's been an eternity since I've been in a crowd.
Yeah. I agree with that. I wrote down, this is like, I went deep. I think the thing I miss the most is the whole thought process of like tomorrow and the future and next month. And I mean, from the standpoint of I miss having things to look forward to. Yeah. Instead of the act of feeling like, hey, I got this trip to look forward to, hey, football season's coming up, all those things have been replaced with worry, anxiety, and stress of what is going to happen. Does that make sense? Oh, yeah. So I think the biggest thing I miss is the suspension of having something to look forward to, knowing it's going to happen. Because
being able to plan something.
Like you and we had a Vegas trip planned. You know, we had a bunch of...
I was going to New Zealand this winter.
You were
going
to go to New Zealand in the winter.
Dunzo.
Done. You know but those are the things as you realize as you get older. The whole reason I'm all about trips, and a large part of like the reason you have trips is not only just the physical act of going on trips, you can't put a price on having a trip to look forward to.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about football even too. Like having football season to look forward to. For me now, usually I'm like college basketball just around the corner. But that's been replaced with, is college basketball going to happen?
Yeah.
What are they going to do? I think I miss that the most.
I think that's a good
one. I don't know if I relayed
one.
That correctly.
Being able to plan and look forward to your plans.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. You just did it better than I did for 20 minutes.
Sometimes
you just gotta. I gotta.
Sometimes you just gotta compress.
You compressed it. Attaboy. Adam via email says along these same lines. Have you thought about the day, this is kind of like just along the things you miss, have you thought about the day things are normal or stadiums are packed, tailgating is in full force, arenas are full, etc.? Will you openly weep? I think I'll flip that question and say, is there going to be a mental block for people for a while to like that scene you just created? I wonder if there's going to be a mental block for people being in a crowd like that for a while. Because like Kirk Herbstreit tweeted out a photo. He must have taken a video of at a Penn State game from the press box of the Penn State fans singing. I think they're singing Sweet Caroline. I mean, it's 100,000 people with white towels singing. And it's so foreign. Like, yeah. You're just like, whoa, look at all those people.
That's I don't know. I mean, I think people are going to feel weird about it for a while.
It's going to take a little bit.
People are going to love it when they get to.
Oh, man. Because there's times where you see big crowds, whether it's in an old game, and you're like, man, what is that? I will say, I think Simmons said this on his pod, and I was singing the same thing. The Luka Doncic game winner at the buzzer was the first time I've watched a sport and been like, God, I'm like, that game, imagine that game in front of fans. You know what I mean? It's just better with fans.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about this NBA bubble. And how the fact that there's no fans, it's affecting some players positively and some players negatively. But I think the overall feel of the game is played differently because
Totally. The
fans, the effect of the fans is real and it's not being implemented on these players.
Think of that Luka game where he had 42 or whatever and hits the game winner. Think of that game's at American Airlines Arena in Dallas. They are losing. They might have rushed the floor.
They would have. Probably,
they would have.
I mean,
they would have lost their minds. But that was the one time I was like, oh man, fans would have made that so much better.
It's a moment that will be lost in history. Mark my words, they're not going to remember that moment because it's the quarantine game. It feels like a glorified pickup game.
It'll be weird. It'll be interesting. You know, when you do like the images of like even this title. You know,
it's going to feel like an asterisk. I mean,
it's just
they even
feel
had
weird.
The shortened 99 Spurs, 98-99 yes, Spurs lockout season. Like, it felt like a okay title. Like, this one's going to feel like even more of an whatever.
It's going to be interesting to see what the images and the lasting memories of that stuff is. I don't know if you got Eric on Twitter says, best Gordo. So, Alex Gordon, best Gordo Lincoln Southeast story. I wrote down a couple of things. I don't have like a like one time Gordo. He comes in the huddle, he looks at me and says, and I don't have like a story like that. Hmm. I forgot about this until Jake Muehlheisen brought it up to us. The fact that he was our long snapper.
Oh, I forgot that.
There's something about that that is just encapsulates something. I don't know what it is, but it's like you're talking about an all-time athlete. Willing to do a job that is pretty like no one wants to. No one's like, you know what I want to be? The long snapper.
But you know what he was the best at? Throwing. Like,
yeah, so it made sense. Because his snap, it didn't look normal. He basically would just
I think he one-handed.
He would one-hand and just like throw it between his legs and it was just like a rifle.
91 miles an hour.
Hey guys, quick break to talk to you guys about Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to make sure that you guys understand that Pella Windows of Omaha and Lincoln, they're following CDC guidelines during this coronavirus situation. They can safely serve any of your window and door needs in the showroom or in your home. All the employees at Pella and the customers are completing a COVID-19 questionnaire as provided by the CDC prior to entering the showroom, entering the office, and any potential customer's home, and all the employees are required to self-quarantine for a recommended 14 days if that individual comes into contact with someone who's tested positive, if they traveled anywhere outside of the Omaha-Lincoln area. Bottom line, they are taking all the necessary precautions to make sure that they are safe and you are safe so you can safely move forward with your window and door needs. And on top of all that, as a result of all this stuff with the coronavirus, Pella is offering temporary special financing options. They are now available. So, man, now is the time to take advantage of these special rates and put that value back into your home, and you have that peace of mind knowing that all the necessary safety protocol and precautions have been put into place by Pella, so you know the whole time you can feel safe. Give Pella a call, 402-493-1350, or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
Let me actually give you a Gordo story. I don't know if you were there. I think this was a buddy Gibbons had a truck, and we went out to Sherman Field for Rebels baseball in the summer, I want to say, right?
That's what it's called.
Yeah, and so this was like, he might have been a junior or going into, might have been going into his senior year.
Okay.
And
I don't think I was here for, I might have been there, because I remember watching him out there a couple times.
Yeah, we went out a couple times, but he hit one, like, this isn't a summer league, he hit a shot in high school, like on a rope. That, like, I think it, like, hit the light post, like, up high on a rope for a home run. Talking, like, there's the fence, that light post on the, you know, the outfield fences. And, he hit it so hard in such a, then everybody kind of, you know, it's one of those things where you looked at it, everyone else there, and went,
that's different.
If it hits the lights and explodes, it's like the natural, right. But it's not. It was in the summer, right. But it's a high school kid hitting the ball on a line going up past the home. Like, it was like, whoa.
That is, because I went to a couple of his games, and I would say one of my biggest regrets is, like, why didn't we go to every Alex Gordon Lincoln Southeast baseball game?
We were too busy doing other things.
Doing stupid stuff. But, like, think about that. We should have, because I remember the game I went to, like, that's one thing. When he hit the ball, it just was different. You were like, you don't need to be Billy Beane to be like, whoa.
You can listen and go, that
just
sound.
Just the sound of it was different. I wrote down a couple of the confident, there's a quarterback, because he was right. The confidence I felt just throwing it near him. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, from a quarterback's perspective, like, when you just feel like, I don't care, if I just got to get it near him, he's going to catch it. I don't know if you remember, I wish I could go back and I wish I had, like, the actual number for it, but he had a stretch our junior year in football where there was like a 4 or 5 game stretch where every time they threw at him, he intercepted it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he had a pick 4 straight games. No, I'm talking about like the 4 or 5 times they actually threw at him.
Yeah,
he intercepted it.
He was incredible at his timing. Like, he was fast, but not like, he's not like a missile.
No,
but he was fast, and he was a bigger corner. But, like, he had the ability to time and high point the ball. Like, he didn't train or practice or think about football. You know, 300
it was totally natural.
Yeah, like, basically almost, you know, 9 months of the year, he thought zero about football, and then he shows up a week before camp, and they convince him to play because he's like, and he plays, and he's an all-state receiver and cornerback, and it was so impressive just to see his hands and his coordination and his skill, and it was effortless. It always seemed like.
It was. Because that's what I wrote down. I go, the other thing, and this isn't a Gordo story, but just the fact that I'm so not surprised to watch what he's become.
That guy's going to the majors. That
because
was it.
You always wonder, like, you know, we're fortunate enough to have been around young Alex Gordon, and there's a lot of guys that are gold glove, you know, big time great players, and you wonder, like, man, I wonder what of all his buddies thought of him when he was younger, and it was like, listen to him. I mean, he would just, everything he did was different. We had a lot of great athletes on the field and on the court at Southeast, from you to Barrett to Jake to all that, like, a lot of, but let's be honest, like, everything he did just kind of looked and felt different.
Well, his was this sort of hand-eye timing,
fluidity,
just had fluidity, yeah. And it was not that he didn't work hard, because he did, but he made it look easy. And even though, like, he might not have been the most quote unquote like fastest or most explosive. You'd have put him through
a combine, it would have been like
he might not have won that at Southeast, but there was no doubt it was like all around athletic skills. You know, Gordo, from the time he was in fourth grade, you're like, but that's Gordo.
I will say that the 1 year, did you ever play ball with Gordo? He was the first half of my freshman year, I was on the JV basketball team with Gordo.
We played those summer leagues together, but he
was an interesting basketball player too.
He was good, but like, it wasn't on top of his mind.
But every once in a while, like he would sit in that diamond press and like kind of get going.
Yeah.
And you'd see some flashes like, whoa.
Yeah.
This guy's something else.
We knew, like, people would talk about him being a potential pro when he was in middle school. I mean,
it was like, yeah.
Fourth, fifth, sixth grade.
Again, I'm not
saying
this isn't like after the fact. Like, I'm just not surprised. But watching him win the World Series, be multiple goals, I'm just like sincerely not surprised.
The thing about him as well is like, as one of his friends like will say, like, he was such a normal guy that didn't play into that at all.
No.
That's probably why it's less spoken about. It's because he was so casual about
himself. There was a mystique
himself
about him, but not from his personality.
Yeah, he could have really pumped up that stuff.
He could have pumped it up
more.
But he was just like,
he just wanted to be himself.
He wanted to be one of the guys and enjoy. He was, that's right. Like, Gordo was just one of the dudes.
He's the most unpretentious person. There's not an ounce of him that
there is zero
all
ego with that guy. Like, none.
It's really awesome too. And that was one of the great things about Southeast in that era, was we had a bunch of really good players, and I don't think we had one egomaniac out of them.
And if there was, you know, he could have been one. You know, some of those guys set the tone more than you think. Like, he could have been one, and he was probably, I mean, you're making the list of like most modest guys. Like, well, Gordo, yeah. Gordo's probably one of the more modest dudes.
Probably going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. Who
yes
knows?
This is sticking with living back in the day, because Terrence via Twitter says, who was your favorite coach in your playing days, whatever the sport? So
let's pick a sport. That's probably make it easier.
Yeah, well, I mean, what makes this hard is I liked all my coaches. I didn't have a single coach I was like, I don't like that guy.
Oh, I mean,
you know
what
I mean? Like, I was lucky in that sense. Even who coached just growing up in basketball? My brother.
Your brother?
Who's gone on to be, I mean, he's in my opinion, the best high school coach in the state. I mean, he's won a state title. Everyone said, he's awesome, you know? Who was our football coach for a lot of... Bobby DePriest and...
My dad.
Tom Rude. Like, we lucked out with that.
Those were the forming years, too. We had family that was really hard on us.
Yes.
That was the greatest thing, I think, is like, your brother would get on me and you really hard and nobody else hard. Like, he got on me like maybe as bad as you or worse. But like, I always took that as a sign of like, if he felt comfortable doing that with me, that was telling me something. It's one, he saw something in me, but also that,
right,
that he knew me well enough that he could.
Well, everybody else could be like, me and you could be 5 for 5. Perfect from the floor, playing great, and everybody else is effing up, and he's going to pull me and you aside and give it to us. And it's like, what are you talking about, dude?
Well,
it's hard to stick along those lines, though. It's hard to not say Chuck Mazursky.
Chuck Mazursky,
my high school football coach.
He's a legend.
Oddly enough, and this is what's weird, because you know my personality, and people that are listening to this podcast have gotten to know my personality, and if you know anything about Chuck Mazursky is as... When you think of a high school movie of like an old school coach, like, that's Chuck Mazursky.
Yeah.
But oddly enough, I'm not sure I ever had a coach, and I mean this, I'm not sure I ever had a coach that understood me more than he did. I know that sounds weird because we're kind of different people, but I just never, I don't know if I ever felt like I was more on the same page with someone.
But that's a sign of a good coach, is he sees, he understands that everybody's different. And I don't think coaches should treat everybody the same. I don't think you should. I think you got to be
Yeah, I don't. I actually don't like them. People's like, he treats everyone the same. It's like, well, that's
everybody's different. I think like, some people need, like, if you're not treating people different, like, you're not getting the most out of everybody.
Yeah, I don't.
And so some people need different things to get the most out of them. So I think you got to know how to get the most out of each person. And that's a gift. As a coach, the coaches that know how to do that with different people, that's a gift.
Right. Because obviously we had great. I mean, Jeff Smith. I don't think I appreciated Jeff Smith until I got to college. My first couple practices at Kansas.
And your fundamentals
and like understanding everybody. like shell drill and where to be on a staggered screen defensively and what we're doing. Like all that stuff was like second nature because of Coach Smith.
Yeah.
And then you realize like, oh, this McDonald's All-American has no idea what to do for this, like, or that.
How to play help defense. Done it. Yeah.
So I almost feel like Jeff was a guy that I appreciated more after the fact. I love playing for him, but I really was like, damn, he was really good. Like,
yeah.
I think that's a mark of a lot of good coaches. It's like you almost, because I know that's how it is for me and Coach Altman. Like I appreciate him more after, because he was a guy that was always in your ass, you know? So sometimes yeah. Man, coach is on me. Like,
yeah, Altman and you, like, it was fun to actually see from, you know, an outsider's perspective how much your two's
relationship
grew, where you became like boys though afterwards.
I tell people all the time, I was in like his doghouse whipping boy my junior year.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Me and him, I don't know what it was. To my senior year, being his guy.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, being really tight.
Yeah.
And it's weird how that evolved in that way. But it was, Coach Self and I always got along great. Like, we just always got along great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you say Miz? You saying Miz?
I mean, if I have to pick
Bo Pelini.
I mean, I loved a lot of coaches. I think just sort of like the mystique and legend of Chuck Mazursky is like
it's hard to beat. As we're going more down memory lane, favorite, this is like Yachty on Twitter phrased this funny, but I'm just reading. He said, favorite athletic action / play you have ever seen or done. So I think just pretty much what he's saying, like, so favorite play you've ever made or seen.
It's pretty broad.
I mean, well, for me, it was stunts to Crouch 01 Oklahoma in terms of like something I saw live. Or when you and I, 2009 Cleveland, LeBron James Eastern Conference Finals against Orlando, hit a shot at the buzzer top of the key to win the game.
Oh gosh, that's tough. I don't have a good one right now. I'm gonna just.
And then what's hard is like a play for myself. I don't know. I didn't make any sort of. I mean, I guess like scoring the game winning touchdown in the state championship.
That to me is like that was a big one there.
Well, then I would say I'd reverse on you. It's like your wheel route touchdown against Millard North our senior year to win 7-6. It wasn't at the buzzer, for lack of a better term, like mine, but it was still the winning touchdown.
Those are good answers. I think let's leave it there.
We'll leave it at that. And then he goes, first time you dunked a basketball, how did it make you feel? And he said, be honest, was it a girls' ball, volleyball, or a regular men's ball? Because dunking's like a seminal moment in your... Because forever, that's like the bit. It's like, can you dunk?
Some of our friends still act like they could, and they were dunking tennis balls, and I know it.
So did you... I can't remember.
Because you were one foot, one hand.
You were a two-footer.
I was a two-foot, two-hand guy.
Because I remember the first times I felt like I could dunk the ball consistently. I would cheat and do the, throw it up, let it bounce and get. I got to where I could bounce it perfectly by the rim, where all I had to think about, I didn't have to worry about palming it. I just had to jump up and be able to dunk it. You know what I mean? And so I would end every workout with like 25 of those until I was just like done. But yeah, when you first can dunk, it's a good feeling. Cool feeling, you know?
I want to say I dunked for the first time maybe like my sophomore year.
Mine was my sophomore year.
Going into sophomore year in summer league. I think I got one down in like one of those like hot summer gyms.
Oh,
and I
was
like,
you know, so
and the
loose.
Floor,
yeah.
The floor, some of those floors were more bouncy than others where you just felt like that old wood might have like springboarded you. And all of a sudden, like you throw one down and you look at your buddies like,
I can't believe I just dunked. I love it.
And once you dunk once, your body kind of goes, well, you're a dunker now and you can dunk.
Do it.
But like to do it the first time is seems like so much harder than after it's done. It's
that
done.
Is weird.
You're a dunker.
But
your body
first
knows
time you them. Dunk, it's amazing.
It's a great feeling.
Nathan, this is kind of, now we're going to get into some like Nebraska stuff here, and then we'll wrap it up in about 10, 15 minutes here. Nathan says, with no spring ball and no games this fall, how far back does this set the rebuilding of Nebraska and other Big Ten programs? We don't really care about other Big Ten programs. If the ACC, SEC, Big 12 all play this fall?
Great question, because now it's time to get serious, Nick.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've avoided, we went all the loosey-goosey questions here to get things
Nick,
started.
It's time to get serious.
Let's get serious.
All right?
Give it to me.
Put your glasses on.
Let's do it. You're done with your wine. Is this wine out for you? You took it to the head, dog.
Oh, I got it. We got a little bit more. Let's do half and half. Okay.
You got it. I mean, no, you want it? All right. Look at you. This wine's legit.
Delicious.
Okay. So.
Because now we're going to have a string of Nebraska questions. I want to pick your brain on this.
Okay. So what does the rebuild look like compared to the SEC-ACC? So this is going to be a, this is going to be a friggin' weird year. Okay. Because if they play and get most of this season done, or even some of this season done, it's going to have lasting consequences and effects, right?
Oh.
So the players in the SEC and ACC are going to play this year, and they're going to crown a national champion, right? And that immediately puts Big Ten and Pac-12 out of the national championship, unless they want to do another one, which is going to be stupid, right?
Yeah.
But then it also it puts the pressure on all these kids in the Big Ten and Pac-12 that want to go pro to make a decision, because the pro schedule is going to stay how it's going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that next year's college football schedule is going to stay how it's going to stay. So it's going to put these people in a tough spot to either play or not play. And then it's going to put every recruit that wants to be in the pros someday to be like, well, do I want to join the cycle of people that are playing every spring, or are they going to play spring, fall, and then double up? And, you know, it's going to hurt the Big Ten big time.
I don't understand how, if the big question is, if the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 get their season off the ground and finish, it's a I don't want to say disaster, but it's almost a disaster from the standpoint of, like you said, one of my chief concerns amongst a bunch of different things is like, how do you ever get back on all of the same schedule? I don't, you know what I mean?
For Power Five not to go all in together and say,
all for one,
all for one,
all playing,
or
we're all not playing.
Like, as bad as the Big Ten's decision was, which I totally disagree with.
Yes.
It's even 10 times worse that it wasn't done as like, hey, the Power Five decided this decision, which I wouldn't agree with the decision.
But at least you're doing it together.
If you're doing it together, you're all in the spring or you're all next year. But the fact that like now we're just like, we're in such a position where you're hurting, you're doing damage to yourself now potentially.
Well, that's what I just don't, like, I mean, if the Big 12, SEC, and ACC play, and they have a, because you saw the college football playoff came out with like their schedule of things, like truly imagine if they play a full season and then have a playoff and crown a champion, and then here comes the Big 10 and the Pac-12. What do you, I don't ever want to say like, what are you playing for? But there is an element of like, I mean, the champion's already been crowned. And then a lot of those guys, who knows if a lot of those dudes are going to play because of the NFL looming in terms of the combine and all that stuff. I mean, just don't know. And even, you know, Ronnie Green brought up this hypothetical last week, the chancellor at Nebraska. You know, I wonder if, I mean, college football is going to start pretty much coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
If if those three other Power Five conferences get off the ground, is there a chance the Big Ten has an emergency meeting on late September, October 1st, and says, guys, what are we doing? Are we?
Is there a chance? I mean, reasonable, rational people would say yes. The problem is, if the people in charge just don't want to, they want to like hold their ground on their word or something, you can't then. But like, reasonable people say, like, look, we've arbitrarily decided a date. Like, why can't we arbitrarily change that date? Like,
yes.
It doesn't, there's no rule that says that you can't change it back. It's being willing to do it.
Yes. And here's the thing. Kevin Warren is even like, there was too much unknown. He keeps on saying unknown. Well, these other leagues maybe getting going and doing it successfully would provide some known.
The NFL should be, I mean, the NFLs are, they're going to play at each of their home stadiums. They're going to try to have fans. Like, they get through 1 week. Why can't you start in October?
I just don't, the thing that would be hard, I wanted to ask you about this before we get to this other question. How hard is it to pace your, like, everybody's been ramping up their bodies for like the season. Like, it's gotta be hard now. Like, what do you even do with the players now? Like, I don't even know what you doing with them now.
Nick, they still have this like 12 or 20 hour.
Which is absurd to me. I mean,
They're still allowed to work out and quote unquote, I think practice. So this is where, this is the hypocrisy of like
the
situation. It's like they're not confident
enough.
It's safe enough
to play, just practice, but not play.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just such a, it's just such a weird, to me, a weird way to live your life of like, of taking zero risk, where like, I think that's just, it's an extreme no risk. And
yeah.
I'm just like, I don't understand it
but
myself.
I just wonder what you'd even do with the players, like how you were even, because that's the thing that I'll be interested to see is, you would think that the Big Ten should come out with their spring/winter plan pretty soon. But I actually think what they're waiting on, I think they're going to wait as long as they can to unveil their winter/spring plan in the hopes. I think the Big Ten is sitting in their offices praying the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 cancel.
Oh, they're betting their careers on it.
Yeah, so I think what their plan is, before we unveil our winter football plan, let's see what happens with these other leagues. So if these other leagues cancel, then we don't have to. Like, I just think in some ways, if the other leagues cancel, I don't know, I'll believe spring football when I see it. But at the same time, these athletic departments need football money. They need the TV money. So there are a million different things that just make it tough. Okay, follow-up question along these things. Dean says, love the pod. I've been listening since day one. Thanks for all the epic content over the last year, especially lately, to help get through all the BS in the world. I want to know, if any, what kind of positives can come from not having a fall football season for Nebraska? Also, how do you think the way the national media has portrayed the program will look in the eyes of recruits? I know we've had some big gets the last couple weeks, but with the talking heads dragging Nebraska through the mud, do you feel like that could turn kids away or make us more attractive to them? The only positive, there really are no positives to not playing.
We got one.
But the only positive would be is guys get to just be in the weight room more and get bigger.
I got one.
Okay. It's not the weight room?
Weight room is, I think there's some development stuff there. That's something, okay. Right? They did close the training table, which, Nick, I think that's a way bigger issue than people realize when it comes to like, hey, you want to build your body?
We need to eat
good food all the time. These guys, if they're going to Mickey D's once a day,
I can go get a salad from whatever, or I can go.
The
to,
skinny guys get fat and the fat guys get skinny. That's what right. happens. Okay. Or the fat guys get way too fat. That's the things that happen. Good food is a big part about building these bodies, right?
Totally agree.
But so here's my positive. I think there is some to the training. I would love it if the training table was open. But Nebraska is kind of unique in the situation of, we don't got anybody that's probably going to go in the first five rounds of the draft.
Right.
So we actually have a decent shot of keeping dudes that are kind of NFL guys maybe for another year. And
I could see that, yeah.
You know, Ohio State, let me just tell you something. If Ohio State, if this goes to the spring, especially if it's not like we're starting January 1.
Right.
And we're going to be done by
Justin Fields. Like, are you really going to play?
Ohio State could potentially have, you know, 5 to 8 guys that say, we're out.
And I wouldn't blame them necessarily.
No, Nick, I'm telling you right now, like,
you're a projected top 5 pick. You're Justin Fields.
It's like, your life. Like, you can't say, I'm going to go to the combine if the combine gets moved after I just came off of playing 10 games in 2 months. You know, like, these guys for, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan, a couple Wisconsin, like, they got more NFL guys right now than we do. However, like, our younger guys are going to have some time to develop. And then if we have some of these older guys that we're going to maybe get back for, that's right. The only scenario I see that Nebraska gets in a quote unquote advantage. But man, I don't like that advantage. I don't like what it does for recruiting. I don't think it helps us. I think it's bad for every team in the Big Ten for recruiting. Period.
Yes.
Nothing about that is a positive.
I agree. I mean, because what's hard is, you know, in terms of dragging Nebraska's name through the mud, like, the one thing I could say is, like, clearly Frost fought for football and fought for the season. So their recruits would be like, this dude stood up and wanted to play.
Yes.
That's good. But what's hard is, like, you got to stay top of mind for people. You know what I mean? Like, you got to stay in there in front of them, you know? Yeah. And so that's where it just... it hurts. I'll be real interested to see what ends up happening with recruiting. If they truthfully, if all these other leagues go and the Big Ten doesn't go, especially because I do get worried, even though you talk about all those guys sticking around, like, I don't know. I mean, I wonder what could happen, especially if they're granting waivers to guys transferring, and like, there could be a mass exodus from some of these Big Ten teams.
I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't know if with this transfer portal, like, are you allowed to transfer right now and go to the SEC and play?
I know there's a UCLA offensive lineman that was trying that. He was trying to transfer right now to an SEC, ACC, Big 12 team and play right away. And I don't think that's going to necessarily happen, but, like, again, there could be some... I mean, if you're Wandale Robinson and you go, okay, do I just need to get out of here and go play for Kentucky?
I mean, it's real. That's real, though. That's real. Like, I mean, the Wandale thing is, like, he has another year left. But, like, if Wandale was 1 year older and he was like, man, I'm like a 5th round draft pick, but I know I should be a 2nd. I just need to showcase my skills. And some coach from whatever is like, come here, I'll throw you the ball 100 times.
A whole bunch of targets, just go play.
This running back, I'll give you, get 200 carries. Guess what, dude? They got you in a weird position there. You come to my school, I'll put you on the edge, and I'll just let you go sack the quarterback.
Right.
Those are the things that could happen that's like, why even put us in that position?
Okay, we'll hammer through these, and you got to go because you got dinner on the table at your house right now. John says, what are your thoughts on the Big Ten players' parents writing letters? Are they sticking up for their kids to play, or is this a college version of fanatic youth sports parents from 5 to 10 years ago, now the parents of college student athletes? I got no problem with it.
No, this is the parents are doing the kids and the university and the coaches a favor. They're saying
they're basically saying, hey, I'll do what you can't do.
Yes, that's all it is. These parents would not say anything normally, but their parents hold a special place in these decision makers' minds. Like, if the parents say hardcore, why are my kids not? It puts pressure on them to have to defend that, right?
At some point, Kevin Warren, like, I know there's been radio silence from Kevin Warren, the Big Ten, in terms of addressing some of these Big Ten letters. Now, Nebraska is the one parent group that has hired a lawyer and is threatening litigation. And I think I heard some people talking about, like, well, why are they doing it? What's the end game? They're not going to reinstate football. It's like, well, yeah, true. They're probably not going to reinstate football. But sometimes it's not about that. It's about trying to put pressure on these decision makers to come forward, even if you know that the process wasn't right, to make sure that they're getting public ridicule for their process.
Well, I think, you know, let's call it how many presidents and Kevin Warren and his team, there's 20 people making a decision about, oh, call it $1 billion. $1 billion in, you know, thousands of jobs on the line. And you know what? When that's the situation and you hold that power, like you got to be willing to, you better be willing to tell people why, and you got to be willing to
totally agree.
To like explain that. And they aren't. And you know what? And the problem is when it starts to feel like they are concerned with how they look and not the end goal of doing what's right for everyone, it's starting to become one of those battles. And especially when they don't say anything, that's me saying like they don't feel like they have to. And that's where these parents, I love what they're doing, because they're putting the pressure on, like, you don't think you have to tell us this?
Oh, you're going to tell
us. This is $1 billion and thousands of jobs. Like, that's I just don't agree with it.
God, I hate to even ask this question. We'll try and do this condensed. Sig Jordan on Twitter says, if you could choose to have Nebraska go back to the Big 12 or stay in the Big 10, what would it be?
I mean,
want to be prisoner of the moment.
Prisoner of the moment, we were just
ready to go back wanted, with our ex.
We wanted to play. Our ex was, she was at the bar.
And she was
we had had a couple drinks.
We've had a couple of drinks. The ex is looking good. She wants to party.
What's funny is we your still got chemistry.
Wants to go home.
We got in a fight with our current girlfriend.
Yes.
We saw our ex at the bar.
She's having a blast.
She was great. In a miniskirt.
Yes. Looking tremendous.
And she was flirting with us.
And it's like, God.
And she said,
wasn't that bad.
And you told her. Okay. So in conclusion, we shouldn't go back with our ex. We tried that.
And there's a reason you broke up.
There's a reason we broke up. We're with our girlfriend right now. We're going to stay with her until we've reached a crossroads.
This is my thing.
Be loyal.
Here's what's hard. The girlfriend analogy works because history is history. Like, you have history with them. You know what I mean? Like, you have, with the Big A, Big 12, you got 50 years of history that you just can't replace, right? Yeah. But here's the problem about being, you know, like, oh, the Big Ten stinks. Well, how much is that Nebraska self-inflicted versus it being the being in the Big Ten's fault? You know what I mean? Like, I view Nebraska's lack of success since joining the Big Ten more about Nebraska's own issues than necessarily its issues with the Big Ten, if that makes sense. Like, you've gone through now, this is your third head coach. You've had three athletic directors. You've had, I don't even know however many coordinators. Like, so I think, like, maybe it's just because I have enough respect for and hold Nebraska's program in a high enough regard that, like, if Nebraska got their stuff together, they're going to be fine, regardless of conference.
I agree. Here's my only sort of hesitation with that is I saw some like Desmond Howard's probably, you know, he's culprit probably 1A. Like, I saw his true colors with what he felt about Nebraska.
Right.
Like, Desmond Howard said Nebraska can take a walk, and then, you know, doesn't say a word about Ohio State. He was saying the same thing,
right?
Which I felt was completely uncalled for. I felt like it was so clearly a shot on how he feels about us and what he quote unquote feels
there.
Is their conference, and doesn't feel. Now that's my only part where I say,
oh, right.
Oh, okay. Like
that's how you feel.
If everybody in the conference doesn't feel like we're a part of the conference. Like, that's the only time when you start looking at the conference you have history with. Well, I go, I've told you before that all happened, how I feel about the Big Ten Network not showing Nebraska games. I'm telling you, Nick, I was going through the big, they're showing all the classic games, and it's like 4-1 other schools to Nebraska.
Well, my analogy was, it's like when you're, making fun of your family. Like, you and Barrett can make fun of your dad. You and Barrett can make fun of your aunt or uncle.
Yeah.
But the second someone else makes fun of your aunt and uncle, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Or your dad, it's like, hold on, you can't say that.
Yeah.
It's because you're not in the family. You know what I mean? So Ohio State can kick up dust, and Desmond Howard's like, that's Ohio State. They're in the family. They can do that. But Nebraska kicks up dust. It's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah,
and that's telling.
And like, it's hypocrisy. That's the problem. I just think Nebraskans couldn't take.
Well, that I think not only Desmond Howard, but even the Nat. It wasn't just. It was all these.
It was Feinbaum,
Wilbon, even other writers piling on. I think you saw a window in how everybody viewed Nebraska in the Big Ten, and I think they all kind of view it as yeah.
It was weird.
I guess there are a lot of different, like, that's such a layered, I'm mad that I asked that question so late. Like, that's a layered question. There are a lot of different ways to look at that. Like, do I think Nebraska can be successful in the Big Ten? Absolutely. Do I think Nebraska's lack of success the past decade is because they're in the Big Ten? No. But does that mean that they're a great match right now and everybody goes perfect? Not necessarily.
No, I think if Nebraska can win in the Big Ten, they'll like indoctrinate us more, but yes. It was a window to me that like they don't see us as really a part of it. The hypocrisy of the rules are different if you're not Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan,
in the family,
and Wisconsin, then the rules are different. Like, that's the first time in my life that Nebraska was on the other side of like being in the like
right.
In this little thing. So like the hypocrisy of that, though, I think most Nebraska fans, and I bet I would target it at a 99% clip of the people listen to this show were pissed.
Yes.
When they heard that.
Oh, I was steaming. My claws haven't come out in defense of Nebraska like that in a while.
I'm gonna have to temper myself from like not wanting to try to like avoid college game day because Desmond Howard pissed me off.
What I'm ashamed of is what my dog was named growing up.
Desmond. Yeah.
Like, that's like, if I could retroactively go like change that, I would. That's how I feel about it. So what's hard is to put, you know, yeah, like I miss Kansas and Kansas State and Iowa State. Like, I miss that. And I think there's something to the drivable games for people.
Recruiting should help. Like, but
there's a lot of different ways to.
I do like a lot of these, like the quality of the Big Ten is, it's been really good. So I don't want to downplay that. I just want to conclude the way
Desmond Howard talked was like, almost like you can't take that back. Like that was like a.
It was like a shot that you can never take back, and it was like everybody in Nebraska put their fists up to be like, okay, here it's wow. Either we're coming after you or we're going to the Big 12. Like that's kind of the feeling we all had.
Last one. We might have pleaded the fifth. Cousin Scott. How dare you, Scott? Cousin Scott Boss says you're leaving the wives at home, taking a dude's trip. If money's isn't an issue, where are you going? And if the wine is good enough, admit what you are doing to pass the time.
Oh.
I have to say, on behalf of Barood, we plead the fifth. No, we're not doing anything. I mean, money's not an issue. We're taking a dude's trip. We can do whatever we want.
Probably going.
I'm taking a private jet to Augusta. I'm going to play Augusta with you. Then we're going to take that jet to like NBA finals game. And then we're going to take the jet to Vegas, and we're going to play blackjack, and then we're going to take the jet to Turks and Caicos, and we're going to lay by a pool and a beach.
And that's one weekend.
And that's one. How about that? You feel good about that answer?
Let's cheers it.
Hey, my man. 1 year anniversary. This has been great, right? Many more wine pods to come, my friend. Go home and eat some dinner, all right?
Cheers.
Cheers. All right, my thanks to Pella Windows and Doors. If you're thinking about a new window or a new front door, now is the perfect time. Give Pella a call at 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. We will see you next time on the Nick Bob Podcast.
A Parkville Media Production.